Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we are watching Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. We are on Season 1, Episode 5, Captive Pursuit, aired January 31st, 1993. Any mistakes that we need to correct from the last podcast?
No, it was perfect.
Okay, I have three things I want to talk about. The first thing is we called this episode Babel, and I called it that because you insisted that Babel was not the right word, but I looked it up afterwards, and it turns out that the Tower of Babel in America is actually called Babel.
I'm sticking with Babel, which is the Queen's English.
Because in the English. UK, yes, it is called Babel. So I thought that was interesting. So I'm going to call it Babel, but it's too late. It's already recorded and released. I'm not going to go back and redo it.
Fair enough.
The second thing I wanted to talk about is that Quark, at one point, when he is stealing food from one of the replicators that works on the command level, he says, never ask when you can take. And you asked, is that a Ferengi rule of acquisition? And I looked it up, and it is a rule of acquisition. It's number 52.
Excellent.
So not a mistake, more of an informative piece of information.
And that is what this show is about. Oh, and leadership.
Oh, gosh. Yes, it's a leadership podcast. Also, the thing I wanted to correct was that we talked about how the doctor that Kira kidnapped, Sir Mac Wren, that he cured the virus after being on the station for a couple of seconds. But just to clarify that a little bit, when Sisko does his log entry at the end, he says the cure was found with the help of Dr. Bashir's notes. So I think we're supposed to believe that Bashir nearly had it cured before he fell victim to the virus.
Ah, you know, that other doctor as well had, was it hardly or barely anything to do with it?
Practically. He says, I practically had nothing to do with it, but yet he was still able to cure the fuzzy dumbbell virus in record time.
I wasn't even there when it happened.
No, he didn't say that.
I don't believe him.
Okay, that clears up the previous podcast. And let's move on to the cold open of this one. So again, Captive Pursuit, episode 5. And we start with an alien female in Sisko's office. And I have to say, she's got some questionable alien makeup on her head. She's saying to Sisko that I'm not what a lot of people think. And she says that if you're a Dabo girl, you get a reputation. But I was really focused on those ridges on her head. And there's something about modern day TV that kind of brought out the fact that it looked a little bit like a Halloween costume. It wasn't really perfectly done.
In NTSC, that probably looked amazing. In our little 19-inch TVs back in the 90s.
Oh, gosh. It probably did. I don't want to go back and watch it on a 19-inch TV.
I have several.
In the garage.
Oh, yeah.
No. Sisko calls her Miss Sarda and asks her to tell him exactly what happened. He asks when she started having trouble with Quark. And I just thought, uh-oh, what has he done now? And she says the trouble started about 5 minutes after she got off the ship.
He does seem to creep after every female.
Gosh, so far, yes. So Sisko asks her, he immediately made sexual advances? Yuck. And she says, Quark says it was part of the job, even though she told him that she'd entertain the gamblers. But she said that Quark had better keep his Ferengi knuckles to himself, which is gross. I don't know. The whole thing was gross. But that didn't stop him. And it turns out it's in her employment agreement, in the Ferengi print.
I love that Ferengi print. I have the feeling Ferengi print is one step below small print. I expect it would make a contracts attorney blush.
Yeah, well, I assume that it's in really tiny print that you can't really read, and it's maybe just sort of scribbled in there, and you either need a magnifying glass to read it, or it doesn't actually say anything. It's just little tiny scratches. She says she didn't read it carefully enough, and Sisko says he's not a legal expert, but after he talks to Quark, she won't be held to this provision concerning the exchange of, and then he gets cut off because Kira calls him on the comms, but I wrote down, exchange of what? Oh, I want to know what? Finish the sentence, but he never finishes it.
I think we see here Sisko laying down the law of how things will be run on the station, very much with a Federation frame of reference, not necessarily a Ferengi or a Cardassian frame of reference.
Yeah.
Plus, I think it might be the lesson for this episode of sexual harassment is bad in the workplace.
Well, I was worried that was going to be the lesson and that I was going to have to put up with this storyline and this character and talking to Quark about it. But fortunately, we just kind of dropped this whole thing on the floor at the end of the scene, which is for the best, because Kira has called and she is saying that something is coming through the wormhole. And he asks if anything is due back and she says no. So he calls for a yellow alert. I think the fact that we just sort of drop the whole thing here is just showing how non-explicit this show was in 1993. And I had to laugh because now when we watch the new Picard show, they're swearing in Starfleet.
Oh, yeah. The Commander-in-Chief unloaded on Picard.
They're dropping R-rated swear words, and, you know, we can't even say, I don't know, anything. We're just implying things that are happening here in this scene. I'm happy that we just dropped out of this story here and moved on to the episode. So a little ship comes through the wormhole. It's kind of wobbling just as Sisko enters into ops. And the ship is unrecognizable by Starfleet files. Miles says there's a massive energy flux indicating it may be damaged. There's a single humanoid life form on board. They hail the ship, and this green dude, kind of like a lizard guy, is surprised to find himself in the Alpha Quadrant.
Is that the name for this episode, Lizard Guy?
I mean, yeah, kind of. When I saw Lizard Guy, I was reminded of this episode. I really vaguely remembered it, but I don't remember watching it at all. And as the story unfolded, I didn't remember the story at all. Although the story itself is vaguely familiar, I feel like I've seen it on maybe some other shows in the meantime, you know, since 1993. Yes.
This is actually one of the episodes that I remembered. As soon as it started, I went, oh yeah, I remember this one. I've probably seen it since its original airing in syndication. It's not like I have an amazing memory and can remember every show back to 1993.
Well, you do remember a lot of strange details from the past that I never can remember
yes,
at all.
Yes, for really useless trivia.
Right.
Utterly useless trivia, I'll point out.
So Lizard Guy is very surprised that he's in the Alpha Quadrant. He says he saw a small ship disappear, and so he followed it. And Sisko says, oh yeah, that was a patrol vessel. So Sisko asks what planet he's from, and the alien avoids the question, asking how long the anomaly, meaning the wormhole, lasts. They tell him it's stable and he can return anytime he wants, so why doesn't he just dock and come in and get his questions answered?
Yeah, he definitely doesn't seem very friendly.
No, he says he's got no time, doesn't explain why, just says he doesn't have time. And Miles now says the inertial stress is overloading his structural capacity, meaning he's gonna blow. So Sisko says to beam him over, but the green dude says he will not abandon his vessel. Miles suggests a tractor beam. He says that will shore up structural integrity. And the green dude is suspicious, but he cuts his engines and lets Miles save him.
Miles has a trusting voice.
It's the accent.
Yes.
They break the comm line at that point, and Dax says, maybe we should skip formal first contact procedures for now. Sisko agrees, and he tells Miles to meet the green alien in the airlock alone so as not to intimidate him. And rolled up sleeves Miles agrees.
Miles gets to do everything.
Yeah, Miles gets to do everything. I think we've seen that. He fixes everything. He does everything, especially when he's got his sleeves rolled up and he's worker guy Miles.
Why can't he complain to Sisko and say, why don't you go and meet him? You're the boss.
Well, because they just established that they want to skip the formal first contact procedures because the guy's nervous and he's from the Alpha Quadrant. They don't even know what species he is. So they're trying to be careful and they're sending in the little happy Irish guy because they think he's got a trustworthy face.
Okay, that makes sense. I'll go with that.
And Sisko does tell Miles, find out what he's nervous about. And then we cue the theme song. Now we go to the lizard ship, and Miles enters the ship with his, I always want to call it briefcase, but clearly it's his toolbox.
Okay, I'm going to have to comment here. So we have lizard guy and lizard ship.
Well,
these are your words for the episodes.
It's the lizard guy ship. You're used to this. This is how I talk about
this. Yes, yes it is.
The green dude appears to be missing, and Miles calls ops and asks if they beamed him out when he wasn't looking. Dax says no, he's still on board. Miles says, friend, there's nothing to worry about. I just want to take a look at your ship and see what the problem is. And so he starts looking around, and he says he's never seen anything like it, and he starts naming things off that he sees, like the off-axis field controller, just as the green guy quietly materializes behind him.
I do like the shots of the ship's power generation or the ship's propulsion system, which appears to be powered by two blue flashing lights.
Yes.
Definitely a discount warp drive effect.
And you know what's funny is later on, we get some more flashing blue lights, which I don't want to give away yet because we're not to that point yet. But that's funny. That seems to be a theme in this episode.
I also think it's interesting that it shows how good an engineer Miles is, because this is completely alien tech and he's basically just opened a panel and having a look in there and already figuring out what's going on.
I think the implication is that at this Jiffy Lube, they're able to fix any kind of ship because ships all basically work the same. They just maybe have different names for parts and different names for whatever it is, but
that's true.
It all still works the same.
None of the drives are truly radical. It's things you've seen repeated before in other ones. That's a good point.
Because Miles hasn't seen a spore drive.
Oh, yeah, we don't mention that here.
Okay.
That didn't happen.
It did happen. So when the alien appears, he says the caladrium flow has been damaged. And because he just appears, he startles Miles. Miles kind of jumps and he hits his head. And he says, hey, don't sneak up on people. That's a rule in the Alpha Quadrant. And the green guy's very no-nonsense, doesn't laugh, doesn't get the joke. He just asks if it can be repaired. And Miles says, it depends. And he's like, depends on what? And he says, it depends on what it is. Which is really funny.
That was a good line.
That was a great line. Miles says, just teach me and I will help fix things. And the green dude says, I don't have time. And Miles says, hey, we'll have you on your way as soon as it's humanly possible. And then he introduces himself as a human, right? As human species. And Green Guy says he is Tosk.
I am Tosk.
Miles asks if that's his name or species. And he just repeats, I am Groot, or I am Tosk. He doesn't say anything else. And Miles is just like, okay, Tosk it is. So the guy wants to fix everything right now, but Miles says, hey, we have to wait for the reactor to cool down. So you might as well come into the station and, you know, look around.
We have coffee in the Jiffy Lube.
Donuts. Coffee and donuts. He follows Miles reluctantly, and Miles asks if he took some kind of shot to his hull. But Tosk says, no, the passage through the anomaly was very rough, and that's what damaged his ship. Then they walk through some kind of force field, and an alarm goes off. The green dude kind of freaks out, but Miles says it's just a security sensor screening for weapons, and it's picking up his phaser.
Yeah, and I thought the alien was trying to do the Pee Wee Herman dance at that point.
Yeah, he does some funny, like, look left, look right, look left.
Yeah, or he's doing like the walk like an Egyptian dance.
So either he is from the Bengals or he's from Pee Wee's Playhouse Planet.
Oh, it could be.
Three Ps. So we haven't seen this force field before or talked about it. So I assume there's a reason we're seeing it now. Like, I'm pretty sure it's going to play into the story again in the future.
Yeah, they need it as a plot point in the writer's room.
Clearly. Tosk then asks why he is wearing a weapon, and Miles says it's for defensive purposes. Because it's risky to enter an alien ship. He says, you might find someone who can make himself invisible. Green Guy kind of looks at him suspiciously, and then he gets up really close to Miles, and he says, I understand. It's very strange.
What's funny about that is, surely if you're going on board alien ships for the first time, wouldn't that be, like, incredibly dangerous? Wouldn't you want to send a red shirt in there?
We don't have a lot of people to spare. We've only got those two NPCs from the last episode who were, you know, looking behind the panel trying to get those people who are stuck in the airlock out.
Oh, I forgot to look at what color their shirts is, but that would definitely be a red shirt kind of thing.
I don't think they were red, but because I think they were yellow.
I just have the feeling they lose a lot of officers that way.
Well, you know what happens so far in this show is we lose a lot of Bajorans.
Oh, yeah, send a Bajoran in.
Yeah. They pass medical at this point, and Tosk says, ooh, a health center? Then he gets very close to Bashir, and he looks him up and down. I thought earlier when he did this to Miles, I thought he was sniffing him.
Yeah.
But when I rewatched it, he was just looking at him. He's just up really close and just looking him up and down. He's got some personal space issues.
Yeah, I did like this, you know, the way that when he gets up to the humans, he's like studying them and gets really close and does this. He does like a full up and down scan of them of like taking in everything. I thought it was an interesting touch of if you were a completely alien race, how these people might look extremely strange to you.
Yes.
If you were a lizard guy.
Yeah, for sure. If they don't look like lizards, they might look funny to you. I would be doing the opposite. I would be getting as far away from them as possible and trying to take a look from a distance. I'd be looking through like the grate and watching them from a long ways away.
Yeah, you'd be like Jake and Nog in like two episodes ago where they were looking through the grate. Yeah.
Yeah. Tosk asks how many people live on the station, and Miles says about 300. And then he asks what is the purpose of the station, which is an excellent question that I'd also like to know. And Miles says, we are the flea market to the sector. So appropriate, and also explains why I did not really enjoy the show, as I have never in my life enjoyed a flea market.
I can't tell if this is an upgrade from you describing it as a floating gas station, now agreeing that it maybe it's a flea market.
Though, okay, two things. First of all, you're the one who called it a Jiffy Lube. That's the first thing. And the second thing, Miles called it the flea market. I didn't call it a flea market. I don't like flea markets. Those are not my people. So I don't know. I don't see how that's my fault. Even though I have called it a floating gas station in the past, you did call it Jiffy Lube this time.
Okay, I will accept that one.
Okay, so Tosk doesn't get the joke. No idea what a flea market is. So Miles says our real job is keeping an eye on the wormhole. They were all sent here before there was a wormhole. So what was the real job before the wormhole?
They were supposed to aid the Bajorans with ultimately an eye to the Bajor joining the Federation.
So I guess they can still do that, But on top of that, they've got this new responsibility.
Yeah, plus the Bajorans, after the Cardassians evacuated, didn't have any means of sustaining themselves.
That is what Picard said, yeah.
Yeah.
Miles says that 5 or 6 ships a week dock at the space station, but he says that T'Sk is the first guest from the other side. And T'Sk says others will come, which is a little ominous.
Oh.
Just then, as they're walking by, Quark is kicking someone out of the bar for cheating, and I think it's the blue woman from Farscape.
It could be. I think it's the same blue woman who was talking to Morn in the last episode, the viral outbreak episode.
She's not quite as blue as the Farscape blue woman, but that was the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, well, maybe she was vacationing there. I'd also like to point out it took us 11 minutes and 30 seconds approximately to finally get to the bar. I mean, where every alien knows your name.
Miles is trying to explain the mission of Starfleet and asks if T'Sk is a scientist or explorer. He just says, "I am Groot," or "I am T'Sk." That's all he says. He doesn't really answer the question.
I do like his quiet insistence of, "I am T'Sk."
Yeah. Well, to him, he's answering the question, which we find out later. It is an answer to the question.
He's very polite.
He is very polite. He's very reserved. Miles takes him into some empty quarters and tells him to get some rest. And he says then they can work on the ship. So they're, you know, waiting for things to cool down so they can do some more work. When he takes him into the quarters, he says, "Hey, I was not the decorator," which continues to just confuse T'Sk. T'Sk never knows what Miles is talking about. And T'Sk says he doesn't need any rest. He only requires 17 minutes of sleep per rotation. And he says he also doesn't need to eat because liquid nutrients are stored in plasmic fibers throughout his body. But Miles shows him the replicator anyway, which I don't know what he's going to do with it. T'Sk thanks Miles. And as he leaves, Miles says, "As the Vulcans say, we're here to serve."
I just like to point out, I have never seen the Vulcans say that.
What Vulcan ever said that? Where did that come from? We both Googled it, right?
And yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
The only place it seemed to have been referenced was from Deep Space Nine.
I wonder if they planned to use it later. They never did because it didn't make any sense. What Vulcan would say that?
I would imagine a Vulcan saying something like, "You are all intellectually inferior."
Yeah, you're here to serve me.
Yeah.
Lizard guy, immediately after Miles leaves, starts asking the computer to show him an interior display of the station. And he asks where the weapons are stored. And for some ridiculous reason, the computer tells him where the weapons are stored. She says access is restricted, but still, she shows him precisely where they're located. The station is not smart.
Yeah, I would wonder about that. I mean, number one, why wouldn't you have certain things off limits? Like, how do I get access to the engineering decks? Or how do I get access to the weapons locker?
If it's restricted access for people to go there, what's the point of showing them what's there if they don't have access?
Yeah.
If you, I mean, that's just some, that's bad coding.
Yeah.
It's bad programming. Bad coding. Maybe they were, you know, they didn't have good requirements when they did that.
I'm thinking maybe a lot of the station is just hacked together just to get it to work. Remember, there's Cardassian technology, and Miles said the Cardassians took anything that was useful.
Yeah.
And clearly they appear from the screens that we see, etc. It appears to be Starfleet computers. So maybe it's just Miles's run some wires, hacked stuff into the network, and got it just working.
I think we've seen that so far, right? That Miles is just kind of hacking things together and trying to make them work to the best of his ability.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a combination of technologies on this space station.
Right. Because, I mean, that would be the other thing you'd think of set up the computers so that if people are asking where the weapons lockers are or trying to get to sensitive areas, Odo gets a beep.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's like if somebody tries to log in as root and they get denied, it goes into a log file. We talked about this before. There's got to be a number of log files that someone should be looking at and monitoring at all times because this would have been a good clue.
Yeah, I will jump back to something you said in the last podcast. I have the feeling that Odo would read everything in a log file. He'd be that guy.
I mean, he doesn't sleep, but he has to regenerate in a bucket. But otherwise, what's that guy doing? He's watching what's going on at Quark's.
Yeah.
And so during downtime, he could just be looking at all these log files.
He could be hanging out at Quark reading the log files.
He could. Miles goes to Sisko's office and to give a report. So he tells him that the alien is hard to read, but he's definitely lying about something. He says the damage to his ship was from somebody shooting at him, not from something that happened while he was in the wormhole. So Sisko says stay close to him, and he says he'll also ask Odo to keep an eye on him. I wrote down, don't we have visual surveillance? Are there no cameras on this station?
This is before the Total Information Society. I do like Avery being very thoughtful in this. I like the way we're seeing that sort of, seeing a lot of different sides of the character of Sisko.
Yeah.
He can be thoughtful and diplomatic and charming and then be quite aggressive when he needs to be.
Yeah.
Part of it is I'm kind of an Avery Brooks fanboy, so, you know.
Yes, you are. That's okay. We go back to the lizard ship now, and Miles and Tosk are working on whatever is broken on the ship. Miles is learning Tosk's words for things, and he's teaching Tosk important human phrases like piece of cake. As they're climbing out of the ship's innards, I noticed that Tosk kicked Miles in the head by accident, and Miles just delivered his line. He just let that go. I backed it up a couple of times and watched it. It was like, whoops, you got kicked in the head.
You can picture the director going, keep going, keep going.
Keep going, keep going.
Miles does seem to be trying to teach him colloquialisms and phrases. I mean, he's using the Vulcan wands and human wands. I mean, is this Miles' thing? I don't remember it being Miles' thing.
Well, it is Miles' thing because he's the one who is kind of informal. And which is why he's the most comfortable with someone like this, and why he's probably the best greeter person at the Jiffy Lube, because he is just sort of very casual. You know, he can just make these comments and just sort of get people to drop their guard a little bit.
Put people at ease. I mean, he is the guy who rolls up his sleeves when he's about to work.
That's right. He's a worker man. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good point.
So Miles is saying they're going to have to replicate some of the parts that he needs, and he says it'll take a day or two to replicate and test. And Toss says, no time for testing, so I figure he is a product manager.
Clearly, we already have sales.
Miles doesn't want his work to have a bad reputation in the Gamma Quadrant, and Toss says he doesn't know when Miles is joking, and Miles apologizes and says he's a natural straight man, so he can't help himself. And it is funny, because just like we were just talking about, he's very casual, very jokey, and Tosk is just flat. No idea. So he invites Tosk to have a drink with him and tell him why he's in such a rush. He said, hey, we'll leave the fellas working. We never see the fellas. But the NPCs in the last episode were not all fellas. Whatever. I wrote down, I thought at least one of the NPCs was female.
Have you noticed they're running off to the bar while the staff is working?
Yeah, that seems fine. Wouldn't you do that?
You guys go and fix the strange alien ship. We're heading off to the bar.
But that's because Miles has a different mission. Miles' mission is to find out what he's up to.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just to fix the ship at the Jiffy Lube, but he's got the NPCs fixing the ship, and then he's going to go and try to figure out what this dude is up to, what he's lying about.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's very cunning of Miles. Get Tosk into a setting where he can potentially get more information out of him.
Right.
Like, who's looking for him?
They go to Quark's, and someone has Dabo.
Most importantly, at approximately 1648, Morn walks right in shot, actually past the two main characters from left to right across the bar. So we get Morn for this episode.
Morn!
And yes, an excellent shot of Morn.
Are you sure it's left to right?
Oh yeah, it's definitely left to right.
Okay.
I know.
Because your left and rights are noise.
Yeah, I
right and left.
Yes. We did discuss how when I talked about the chroma effect on the pylon was actually moving right to left, not left to right.
Right.
That's another thing people learn from this podcast. I have no concept of left and right.
Yeah, it's fine. Tosk is looking a little bit confused. He says nothing like this exists on his world. And then he says, so you sleep a full third of your rotation, and then you rest and relax when you're awake. Alpha Quadrant has too much downtime. And Miles says his wife would laugh at that. She's barely seen me in the last 3 weeks. And I thought, oh no, how wrong you are, O'Brien. We have not seen her in weeks. Not one time. She had her chance in one episode, and then poof, she's gone.
Yeah, she's had her episode.
Yes, she's had her one episode for the season.
She's done.
I hope we see her again. I quite like Keiko. Tosk says they are very different, which is obvious. Miles shouts, hey, barkeep, at Quark, and Quark is annoyed. He says, don't call me barkeep. I'm not a barkeep. I'm your host, the proprietor. So I wrote down, he's Luke Danes.
I don't get that reference.
One of the most important shows in the last 20 years.
Stargate SG-1?
Gilmore Girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not in the same genre. Miles says that Quark will exploit any vice that you have. Then he orders two synth ales and calls Quark barkeep again.
I love the way he's picking on Quark.
He
there.
Is really Miles, picking on Quark. Yeah. Miles has got kind of a sharp edge, and we see it a few times in this episode. We see it here, we see it again later when he talks to Quark, but I feel like we've seen it with Bashir.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what that sharp edge is with him, because he kind of goes between being, hey, he's that super casual, everybody likes him guy, But then also he's got this little harshness to him sometimes.
I have the feeling the character is supposed to be someone who is very no-nonsense. And as you're pointing out with this, he's been given a mission, a directive to get to know this guy and be friendly with this guy. So Miles is turning on the charm and is being hospitable to him.
You would describe him as no-nonsense? I would really not describe Miles as no-nonsense.
I think when it comes to work and being technical,
yeah,
I would see him as somebody who demanded high standards. And, you know, when you were actually supposed to be doing the work, there's not a lot of messing around or joking around.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I could see him being, you know, like a pleasant character to spend time with.
Okay.
I could see him picking on Quark as he knows what Quark is, which is a manipulator and you know, a kind of a crook, a lovable rogue, or not that lovable rogue, that sort of driving Miles's behavior towards him.
I wonder if we could describe Miles as a sort of salt of the earth type character.
Oh,
where
Yeah,
he's got that, I'm going to have a beer with you and a laugh, but when I see something stupid, I'm going to say it's stupid.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I think I would agree with that summary.
Tosk apologizes to Quark for having no vices to exploit. This guy's a laugh a minute.
He really is.
So Quark sees it as a challenge, and he suggests a visit to the Hollow Suite, and Tosk says he has no use for a fantasy adventure because he's already living the greatest adventure. So Quark just kind of goes, okay, and he leaves. So O'Brien asks what's up with this adventure, but Toss says he can't discuss it. When he was looking around in that scene, I noticed that the lizard mask on his throat was a little bit loose. Again, I was thinking, oh, this probably looked better in standard def.
Yes.
We go back to Ops, and Miles is reporting in again, and he says he doesn't know much or hasn't learned much, just that he's definitely running from something. Julian says people tell doctors things all the time, but they don't even let him finish his thought.
Oh, yeah.
Miles just kind of talks right over him, and he says that he likes Tosk, but he doesn't quite know why.
He totally cuts him off. Like,
he cuts him off,
cuts him off dead.
And he rolls his eyes at him in the very first episode? I can't remember, but he rolls his eyes at him in some other episode.
It's the episode where we first get introduced to Garrick. Miles does an absolutely epic eye roll in the background.
Yeah, that was the second episode.
Yeah. I have the feeling that Miles looks at Bashir as the sort of the silly little brother, the sort of the kid who you have to put back in his place because he comes out with stupid things.
I hope they develop this relationship a little bit better, because right now it just, I don't know, it's not fun.
I would tell you, but you keep on pointing out how you don't want spoilers.
I don't like spoilers.
There definitely seems to be that Miles doesn't really seem to have a lot of time for Bashir.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Miles says that he doesn't think Tosk is a threat or dishonest, but Dax and Sisko point out that he did lie about the damage to his ship, but Miles just thinks he's naive more than anything else.
Yeah.
Sisko says, if Tosk has nothing else to say, then when his ship is fixed, just wish him well and send him on his way.
So Sisko's being diplomatic and he's sort of being very much a pragmatist in this situation. You can't force contact with this person or this alien race, and you can't make them give up information that they don't want to, or anything, really. It's interesting that Sisko is very much a pragmatist.
I think he's thinking, I don't really have a lot of lines in this episode, so let's move it along.
Okay, that's completely fair.
So now we move on to a dark hallway somewhere, and Tosk is up to something. He's accessing a computer, and there's a painting on the wall behind him that turns out to be Odo. And I thought, really, are there any other paintings anywhere? That was the most obvious disguise ever.
We're going to have to start watching the walls. This is my thing about looking in the background and looking for interesting things in the background, looking for paintings on the wall.
Well, they do this on the show a lot, where something happens and then the camera goes behind the people to something that's out of place, and then it turns into Odo.
Yes. So this week's Odo is an impressionist painting.
Is a painting. And Odo says, just what do you think you're doing? The lizard guy immediately goes invisible, and Odo calls for security to seal off the corridor. When the invisible guy hits the force field, he materializes. Tosk says he did nothing, but Odo asks what he was doing at the security junction, and he says he must prepare and he can't discuss it because he is Groot, because he is Tosk. And Odo says, oh, I'm sure you are. That made me laugh.
Busted.
Odo says that they can go to his office together while O'Brien looks into what Tosk was doing. And Tosk says, O'Brien? Like, he's hurt. Tosk says he won't fight him, and then they take him to security. After the ad break, we are in little jail. Sisko is looking through the force field and talking to Tosk. And Tosk says he did nothing to him, but Sisko says you are tampering with the security grid, which makes you a threat. And O'Brien enters to say he was trying to shut down the lockouts in the weapons locker. And Odo asks if he's committed crimes in the Gamma Quadrant, and Tosk says, never, I am Tosk.
Sisko seems very confused by this. I mean, or sort of exasperated by this, if all he can get out of him is, I am Tosk.
Right, because he says, is that supposed to mean something?
And he won't discuss anything any further.
No, he says, yeah, that's all I can say is that I am Tosk. Sisko says to hold him for now, and they'll wait and see if someone shows up looking for him. Then Sisko and Odo leave, and O'Brien is left there alone with Tosk. He asks him to reveal what he's up to, but Tosk just says, you must let me out. You must let me die with honor. That's all that he says.
Allow me to die with honor, were his exact words.
All I could really think here is, why did the computer tell him where the weapons were? We wouldn't have had this problem if the computer hadn't done that. They should change that.
Yeah, they should fix that. Although, I had a flashback to the Man of Steel movie with the line, a good death is a reward in itself, for some reason. Kind of like the awesome Worf line from First Contact. Perhaps today is a good day to die. I'll try to bring that movie into every podcast.
Okay. In Odo's office, Miles says he feels responsible. He says he kind of adopted him and convinced him to come on board. He says he doesn't think Tosk means us any harm, but he does wonder what his secret is.
Now, there's something here I didn't really notice before, or certainly didn't remember, is Odo seems to have a very cynical edge.
You didn't notice that before?
I don't think I really noticed that.
He's pretty negative.
Yeah, maybe it's because I remember the later Odos as the character evolves, but at this point, he seems to have a very cynical edge.
But don't you remember when he just wanted to throw the Klingon women in jail?
Yes. Yes.
Because he felt like the Cardassian rule was easier for him because it was so black and white.
Yeah. I think I just forgot this about Odo, but it's very sort of jarring.
Yeah, I don't find Odo particularly likable. I mean, I don't know how he's going to evolve because I gave up somewhere along the way. I know that he evolves more later, but who is terribly likable on this show right now? Not Quark. Sisko, we had one episode where he's heavily in the pilot, which was great, but then he hasn't really been the main character in any of these episodes so far.
Miles?
Miles is a little likable, but he's always that sort of haggard guy, which I don't find super interesting in the long term. I think there's maybe some hope for Kira, but she's such an angry woman. And Dax, we haven't seen much of at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know who the really likable characters are just yet. But, you know, in Next Gen, it took me a long time to warm up to the characters, too. I think
that's very true.
Yeah, it takes a while for the characters to really establish themselves and become more than just the anecdotes of each episode and start to build something as a character. And we're not there yet with any of these characters.
Yeah.
I think they did a pretty good job with Sisko in the beginning, but then we just dropped it and we haven't picked it back up yet.
Because I think they're trying to get the other characters, if you like, up to speed as fast as possible.
Round them out more.
Yeah, I think that's what we're trying to see here.
All right, let's go back to Ops. And another ship is coming through the wormhole. It's like, finally, someone is searching for this guy. Dax says, sensors are picking up ionized I-band emissions. The pattern matches Tosk's ship. They don't respond to hails, of course. A white spotlight runs across Ops, and Dax says, we're being scanned. Kira suggests putting up shields, but Sisko says, let them have a good look at us. But then when it looks like they might be transporting over, Sisko calls for shields, and he hails them again.
They are not very friendly, are they?
No. And then the station starts to shake, and Miles says they're being bombarded with some kind of radiation. I think he said rapid magnetic flux variations, which is okay. I don't know what that is.
It's magnetic flux variations that are varying
rapidly.
Is that
rapidly. Like a flux capacitor from Back to the Future?
Could be. It's Star Trek science.
They reverse the polarity of the shields, and they were able to beam onto the promenade. So Sisko calls for security.
Now, shouldn't the Federation be trying to get a hold of that technology at first chance they can get?
Yes.
They literally turn up in a relatively small ship.
Took the shields down.
In a matter of seconds.
Yep.
Without any real effort.
Yeah, these guys are scary.
Yeah.
So Odo and others, in security, I guess, run onto the promenade just as some guys in red military-looking uniforms and gray helmets arrive.
Oh, with the blue visors.
With the blue visors, yeah. You can't see anybody's face.
That's a great cosplay. I mean, those are really good cosplay outfits.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
You'd probably die of heatstroke wearing one of them, but they look really good.
Helmets and long sleeves, it's a lot for Comic-Con.
Can you imagine how much those actors were sweating on the set?
Well, they probably had air conditioning, at least, unlike Comic-Con.
Yeah.
When you're outside.
Yes, that is true.
So the red guys are armed, but they're not pointing their weapons. Sisko and O'Brien and Kira enter, and they walk kind of decisively in front of these guys.
If you watch this scene, watch Kira come out of the elevator. She's in the background.
Yeah.
But she just marches out of the turbo lift.
She's got that angry walk.
Yeah, she just this like power walk.
Shoulder swinging.
Yeah, just this. Yeah, and she walks to the, it would be the right side. Yeah, she walks to the right side and she basically pulls this pose and she has her head tilted on one side and it's like, yeah, I'm going to beat you if you get in my way. It's like she's going to a gang fight or something.
Well, she's probably used to fights as a freedom fighter.
It's awesome. It is like, yeah, I mean, I've forgotten how kick-ass she was, but that one is just a great, I mean, it's the march and then the standing and then the head. It's like, yeah, do not mess.
So they do ready phasers and then we go to an ad break.
Yes.
And we come back to the promenade and Odo and Sisko try to approach the red guys and they really easily just knock Odo over and Sisko's trying to drag him out of the way.
How did they knock Odo over?
I don't know. They just shoved him over. I mean,
this is a guy where people throw stuff at him and he quick enough changes that it goes through him.
And in that situation, why would he have even been so on guard? In this situation, there's these guys with guns. You'd think he'd be more on guard. But yeah, they managed to knock him over. You're right. It was completely silly. His hand should have gone right through him.
I assume they move very fast. I mean, maybe that's something that can't be captured by the television experience.
So Kira, Kira fires at the Cybermen guys, and they seem to absorb the phaser fire somehow into their arms. Like they've got shields on their arms.
They have Wonder Woman bracelets.
But it's the Wonder Woman gauntlets. Yeah,
you know, she would deflect the bullets from it. Clearly Wonder Woman. Also, if you notice, the first person to start firing, Kira.
Yes, and in this firefight, it's strange because sometimes they knock the red guys over, and other times it doesn't seem to impact them because it's absorbed into their arms.
Well, it seems to be they knock them over, and then they just get back up.
They just get right back up, exactly. Finally, Odo realizes that they're after Tosk, and Kira says maybe they have a right to him, but Odo is like, no one's taking my prisoner.
No one's taking him out of my brig.
So she tries to give him a phaser, but he doesn't want it. Odo doesn't want any part of weapons. Then one of the red guys is right next to them. This whole firefight is really weird.
I call them the blue visors. You call them the red guys.
Because they're all dressed in red. So the red guys with the blue visor, all of a sudden there's one right next to them and Kira shoots him, but he's totally unharmed and he points his own weapon at a nearby door, which is the door to the brig. And he fires one shot and he just blows the door apart. And somehow when that happens, Kira and Odo get knocked over. And I don't know if you saw this, but just the way that I paused it when I was taking notes, Odo is a little handsy in that scene.
Oh, I did not notice that.
Yeah, I didn't want to notice it, but I did notice it. I think they're pretty lucky, though, that they aimed the guns at the door and not at any of them, because those are clearly pretty heavy weapons.
Yeah.
And we go into the brig, and of course, Tosk is invisible, but the red guy has this sort of flashlight, black light or something on his helmet that reveals Tosk, so that's useless.
Yeah, the helmet has a built-in black light. I tell you, it's an awesome cosplay.
The red guy says, I have Tosk alive. It is over. And the other two red guys who are on the promenade, they beam away immediately.
I do like that special effect.
When they beamed away?
It's kind of a different teleporter.
Transporter.
Yeah.
The red guy in the brig now takes off his helmet to reveal a full head of hair. That's the note that I took. Look at all that hair.
Another hair guy.
He's a little green like Tosk. And he has kind of a similar nose, but he doesn't look like he's the same species. And he says, what a disappointment. And Tosk looks sad. And he says, after such an entertaining beginning. And Sisko says, entertaining? He ignores Sisko completely and just talks to Tosk. And he says, these aliens, meaning the people he was just shooting at on the promenade, gave us a great deal of resistance. And we wondered how you got their cooperation without violating your oath of silence. And I thought, uh-oh. I sense a lesson coming. It's like, what is the lesson going to be of today's Star Trek episode? Tosk said that he told them nothing, the red guy has, this is where we were talking earlier about the blue lights that powered Tosk's ship. Did you notice that the red guy on his sash has little blue lights as well? It's just little flashing lights. What the heck were they for?
I did not notice those. I saw the little bandanas they were wearing had a whole collection of flashing LEDs.
Mm, yeah. So red guy says, oh, you got yourself caught and are now caged and helpless. This is the most disappointing hunt in history. And Sisko is not amused.
Oh, he is in full angry Sisko mode.
Yes, but the red guy doesn't really care. He looks him up and down and says, the prey will endure the greatest humiliation Tosk can know. I guess Tosk is a generic term and not the guy's actual name.
Right.
And because he's been captured alive, he'll be put on display where children can make fun of him. And then he does this really weird shiver. Did you see that?
Yes.
What the heck was that?
I love it. It's a little grunt and a shiver that he does, sort of showing disgust.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
I thought it was funny that Sisko, when he said, you know, it's a, and this is your prey.
Yeah.
And the alien says, oh, you know, he's not even worthy of that noble description. That kind of made me laugh because I'm thinking, yeah, you're just making things worse, Sisko.
So the red guy says he needs to release Tosk. And I thought, they took down the shields of the station pretty easily. They can't break him out of the brig.
Well, maybe at that point, they've decided to be diplomatic. It doesn't seem very likely because those guys are kind of jerks. But it does seem like, why didn't they just teleport him off?
Sisko says, we'll discuss this in private. And he says, unless he intends to take him by force, and then the station will open fire on his ship.
I have a theory about this that we'll talk about in a minute.
And the guy says, over this Tosk? Sisko moves away and the guy reluctantly follows him. And Miles looks at Tosk, who looks humiliated. I couldn't quite in the scene read Miles' expression. I'm not sure what he was trying to convey there.
Well, I think this was interesting because clearly these hunters have some kind of protocol or code of conduct because they didn't try and kill the Tosk when he was unarmed and defenseless and in the cage.
Because it wasn't about killing him, it was about the hunt.
Yeah, clearly it was about the hunt. I thought that was an interesting pointer to their kind of their culture or society that you didn't just want to kill it. It had to be a hunt.
Yeah.
And I assume that the Tosk could actually fight back. Maybe the hunters could actually get killed by it or injured by it, and the Tosk could recruit allies without necessarily telling them, because they didn't seem that upset that these aliens helped
him. No, as long as he didn't tell them what was happening.
Yeah.
But he didn't have any weapons, so it's not exactly a fair hunt.
I don't know if the ship actually had weapons.
Well, the ship might have, but he didn't have any, I guess, on him was my point.
That's a good point, yeah. So maybe they don't want them too well armed.
Yeah, right. We don't want the hunt to be too hard.
This made me think of Predator.
We go now to Sisko's office, and the red guy asks if there is something similar in human society, and Sisko says, centuries ago there were blood sports, but they don't hunt sentient beings. And red guy says he is sentient only because we made him sentient, and he's been bred for the hunt. His entire existence is for the hunt. And he says Sisko obviously doesn't understand. Sisko is livid, I would say.
Yeah,
and
he's very annoyed.
Yeah, he says he has no tolerance for abuse of any life form.
Blue Visor, or Red Guy, as you call him, he says that they're a cultural icon for his people.
Yeah. Well, he said, that they're a symbol of all that is noble and courageous.
They've been bred for this purpose, which I think is kind of, wow, that has some serious moral implications if you're breeding creatures to be in the hunt and to be sentient. It's kind of fascinating, really, thinking about it.
He also says, we honor Tosk. And then I thought, well, how much do you really honor him if you're going to have children laughing at him and throwing things at him?
Because he didn't die during the hunt.
But you're not really honoring him. The honorable thing in that case might have been to kill him then.
Yeah, right.
Or, I mean, I don't know, start the hunt over, I guess, a game, but it's not a game.
I have a theory about that. Okay. Now, you pointed out that the shields are down. They could have teleported him off at any moment because he was only in the brig.
Well, no, what I was saying was, they managed to take the shields down. Why couldn't they just take the force field of the brig down?
That's an interesting point. Maybe they didn't take the force fields down and just beam him out or take him out or whatever. Subconsciously, or perhaps even deliberately, they want the hunt to continue. So it's kind of like the thing with cats, where they do the play with their toys and that, and they do the bit where they like look away and pretend that they're not looking at it, so they can turn around and jump on it when it moves away.
Maybe there are some rules around the hunt. Like, you can't just beam them onto the ship because that would make the hunt very short.
Mm-hmm.
Because even at the end, they never beam him anywhere.
That's true. That's why I wonder if in their code or maybe the rules of the hunt, you have to give the Tosk more chances to get away. Plus, it would obviously keep the hunt running. I'll tell you one thing that totally pops into my head. It's Restaurant at the End of the Universe, where they have the cow who's been genetically engineered so that it actually wants to be eaten and is sentient, so it can tell you it wants to be eaten. That was totally going through my head.
That wouldn't make me feel any better.
Depends how tasty the cow was.
Sisko says he can't judge what's right or wrong on the red guy's world, but we're not on their world, we're on his station. And the red guy puts up his hand, like, talk to the hand. And he says, in the future, passage through the anomaly will be considered out of bounds for the hunt. And he asks if that will satisfy Sisko. Then he beams away. Sisko comes out of the office saying he's agreed to release Tosk. Miles protests. Sisko says it's their custom and under the Prime Directive, they can't interfere. And Kira says, well, what if Tosk asks for asylum? And Miles is suddenly very excited and he runs off to talk to Tosk. And I felt like, have you never seen Star Trek before? There's no way this guy is going to accept, oh yeah, I want asylum. It's just, I don't think they'd ever seen an episode of Star Trek before.
Probably not.
Yep. Miles tells Tosk he's gone to the brig and he tells him that he can request asylum and that Sisko will protect him. Groot just says he is Groot and he can't hide behind the Federation. It's against everything he believes in. It would be a greater dishonor to stay than to be taken home in disgrace. He says he lives to outwit the hunters for another day, to survive until he dies with honor. He realizes that that will not be his fate, but he says he will not deny his existence as Tosk, so he will not request asylum.
The Tosk, as well, believes completely in this system.
Yeah.
Interesting moral dilemma.
At some point, they're going to figure out they got the short end of that deal.
Yeah, clearly.
It just might take a while. After the ad break, we're in Quark's, and Quark is mad that the new aliens, I guess the red aliens, don't buy any drinks. Miles tells him to shut up, because again, that harsh edge is back.
Oh yeah. Most importantly, there's no Morn. I didn't see Morn in this scene.
In my notes, I wrote butthead, and I remember the reason I wrote that was because we got this view of Quark from the back, and his big Ferengi head looked like a butt, and so I wrote butthead.
That's valid. That's not a bad description of Quark.
No, it's really not in a number of ways. Quark sees that Miles is being a little bit testy, and he asks if there's trouble with the little woman, which that was not the right thing to say.
Ouch.
Miles grabs him by the collar and says there's nothing wrong with his marriage, and Quark apologizes. Then he tells Miles that his face gets pink when he's aggravated, and Quark keeps trying to get Miles to talk to him. I couldn't quite figure out why, but it was like he was trying to be a barkeep or something, because he kept trying to have a conversation with him and get him to tell him his problems.
Ah, well, I have a theory about this too.
Okay.
And I bet there is one of the Ferengi rules of acquisition about getting information, and having information about things is very valuable. So,
maybe.
Quark, and he pointed out earlier that he was a friendly ear for the disaffected or whatever.
Mm.
I would expect Quark to be using the bar as a method of information gathering on events in the station, people. So I could see him being deliberately friendly, being a sympathetic ear to anybody who wants to talk, because it could give him enormous advantage.
That is kind of what he's doing, because even after Miles leaves here, he goes off to the next person, right, to try to get that person to talk to him.
Yeah.
But in this scene, Quark tells him that Tosk is being hunted, and Miles says the Ferengi would just change the rules of the hunt. That gives Miles an idea, and he runs off, and that makes Quark very pleased with himself, like he really accomplished something in that scene, even though he doesn't know what it was.
Yes, that was funny. Quark does feel very pleased with himself in that scene.
Yeah, and then he goes over and is trying to talk to someone else about something.
Extract intelligence information from the next unlucky guest.
Miles is up to something on a computer, but we don't know exactly what it is. It's something in security. And while he's doing that, the red guy is putting a restraint around Tosk's throat. Odo says that hardly seems necessary, but Red Guy says this is just how it works when a Tosk is captured alive. Then Miles appears in the brig and he tells Odo that he will escort the transfer. Odo says this is a security matter, and Miles says it's a Starfleet matter, and he's doing it on orders from Sisko.
Pulling rank.
Odo is immediately annoyed and stomps away to talk to Sisko. I think that Odo is way too gullible.
Yes.
Why didn't he just call Sisko and ask him? But he doesn't. He runs off.
I have a theory about that. I think Odo didn't contact him because Odo was really angry about it.
Odo is always, yeah, he's always mad.
Odo has a real ego on him.
Yeah. He always thinks someone is stepping on his job.
And
yeah.
I think that comes down from Odo has this real sense of professionalism. I could see him not wanting to communicate with Sisko and actually go straight to Sisko and say, hey, what the hell, dude?
After Odo leaves, Miles convinces Red Guy that he should accept an offer of an official escort as a token of respect. Red Guy...
Blue visors.
Except they don't have their helmets on, so they're just red guys.
Oh, okay.
Red Guy agrees, and Miles tosses his communicator away as they leave the room. So you know Miles is up to something he's not supposed to be.
You know that's trouble.
Then Odo comes ranting into Sisko's office. Sisko says, hey, I didn't tell O'Brien to do anything. So Sisko calls O'Brien, but of course he doesn't have his communicator, so he doesn't answer. Miles, meanwhile, is leading Red Guy and Tosk through the station. And when they get to that security force field that we saw earlier in the episode, Red Guy tries to walk through it and he gets completely knocked down. And then O'Brien just punches him in the jaw and he says, glass jaw, no wonder you wear a helmet, which was pretty funny.
Nice touch. I guess they're getting in the Irish boxing thing in there. There's another good Irish stereotype there. Miles is a boxer.
As Miles and Tosk then run off, Red Guy from the floor says into his communicator that the hunt has resumed.
He does seem quite excited about that.
He does. Miles is trying to take Tosk to his ship, and a Red Guy appears, and somehow Tosk knocks him out, so he's like fighting back. We go back to Ops, and Dax says that there are two life forms in an access conduit above Quark's, and they're headed toward the docking ring. So Odo says he'll seal off the adjoining corridors and they won't get far. Sisko stops him, and he says, Constable, there's no hurry. Odo looks truly flabbergasted by this, like, wait, what? But then he turns and he walks away even slower than usual towards the elevator. Like, la-ta-ta.
Yeah, I did like that. Also, as you keep on pointing out, that elevator's very slow anyway. I like this scene because it shows that Sisko is very flexible, that he's prepared to bend rules and not just follow them.
Yes, because he's not thrilled with this whole deal either.
It's clearly something that's contrary to his personal values.
Yep.
And even though it's a first contact issue, a prime directive issue, he's not prepared to totally follow the book. I like that level of flexibility that's shown in Sisko. This actually jumps to another movie piece that I loved. Do you remember the movie The Limey?
Mm-hmm. With Terrence Stamp.
Yes. And there's a scene in the movie where Bill Duke, who plays a DEA agent, says to Terrence Stamp, procedure becomes whatever you got to do on the day. I always loved that line. It just totally stuck with me. And I feel Sisko in this situation is basically implementing that. He's doing something that works on the ground that is not necessarily Starfleet procedure.
Right.
But in Deep Space Nine, with all these alien cultures, with these now contact with races from a different quadrant of the galaxy, it does feel like it's a procedure becomes whatever you've got to do on the day. I mean, you can't change the ethics or the morals of this society in a single go. So I think the best thing you can do is to help the Tosk escape, give it an actual chance. Not the best outcome, but one that Sisko is prepared to take.
Meanwhile, in the conduit, Miles removes Tosk's collar with a phaser, and Tosk says, now you are Tosk, which Miles finds pretty funny. Then Miles says that the Cardassians made the conduit so thick that they can't be scanned, which is confusing because in the previous scene, Dax says they're in the conduits, so clearly she was able to scan it.
It is Dax. She has 300 years of experience in scanning things.
Yeah, but also the Red Guys seem able to scan through it too because they start shooting through the floor at them. And they drop down through a vent. Tosk manages to take out one of the Red Guys and steal his weapon. They're nearly at Tosk's ship when three Red Guys, including the long-haired leader, appear. The long-haired guy says he's mine, and Miles aims his weapon, but Tosk stops him from shooting, and he shoots the hair guy instead, and somehow, with one shot, all of them are wiped out and fall over, and seem to be steaming after they hit the ground.
It was a very powerful weapon. It blew a hole in the wall door of the brig.
Yes.
I assume it has power settings, you know, maybe like a Federation phaser, so he didn't set it on blow them all to bits.
Yeah. The two of them get to Tosk's ship, and he says the hunt goes on and asks O'Brien if he wants to come with him. And O'Brien says one day as a Tosk is enough. And Tosk asks if he'll be punished for helping him. And he says maybe, but he gave the guys a hunt, which is what they wanted in the first place.
Oh, that's true. He was being culturally sensitive. That's actually something to commend Miles for.
Right. Then Tosk says to him as he's leaving, die with honor, O'Brien. And Miles says the same thing back to him, and he leaves his ship. And they use the DSN theme really nicely here to add a little bit of drama to the scene and emphasize the emotion. It was actually really good.
So Tosks are allowed to fight back.
Yeah.
And use weapons against the hunters. Do you think he killed them?
Well, I don't know. Earlier, I thought when the hair guy ran into that sensor force field, I thought he was dead, but he wasn't. And, you know, they've got pretty strong armor in their uniforms or whatever those things are.
Yeah.
They were just lying on the ground. They didn't really show whether or not they got back up. Miles did say, hey, the hunt is back on. That's what they wanted. And I guess to me, that implied that they weren't dead, that they were just knocked out.
Gotcha.
But they really don't say. They're just lying there on the ground. So they could be.
Yeah, I would assume they were still alive. But maybe that's part of the thing with Tosk, if they're allowed to fight back but not use lethal force.
I don't know, because if those are the weapons that they're using on the Tosk and they clearly kill the Tosk,
Yeah.
The weapons are pretty strong. But like I said, they've got that armor of some kind that is blocking the energy weapons. So they're probably okay, but I don't know.
Interesting point. So yeah, we don't actually know.
We don't know. Now we go to Sisko's office, and Sisko is asking O'Brien what exactly happened at the security checkpoint where the red guy got zapped. And Miles said that the weapon sensor must have overloaded on all the guy's gear. But then he owns up to it, and he says it maybe happened because he increased the output by 200%. Yeah, that's probably what happened.
Yeah, it could have been that.
And Sisko says, so you assaulted them on our first contact with a new species. Yeah,
and he punched him.
Yeah, he left that part out. Sisko says that Starfleet wants a report of the encounter. And Miles says, hey, both sides wanted the hunt. Sisko tells him to save his excuses. He ignored his duty and he took off his comm badge so that he could ignore his commander. So he was doing all this on purpose. And he says, another stunt like this and his wife won't have to complain about the conditions here anymore, meaning he would get shipped off somewhere else. but really, what could be worse than Deep Space Nine? Where's he going to send me?
He's going to send him to the neutral zone.
He'd have to be a janitor somewhere.
Put him on a cargo drone.
He'd be a janitor in a cargo drone. Miles says he understands, but then when he's leaving, he says he knew he couldn't override all of the security seals in the station, so he was surprised that once the constable located him, he wasn't locked behind a force field somewhere. And Sisko says, oh, I guess that one got by us. So Miles understands, and he leaves, yeah. And Sisko kind of grins. And boom, episode over.
Clearly, Sisko wasn't thrilled by the hunters and having to follow the prime directive of not interfering. Everything seemed to work out. Plus, it was true. Miles was being culturally sensitive towards this alien race by allowing them to have their hunt.
There are these cases where we will just sort of work around the prime directive when we don't really like how it works.
I think it's great that it shows Sisko's flexibility in this situation. I mean, in some ways, that's almost a callback to the original series, you know, where Kirk would be very flexible and not necessarily follow the prime directive.
Yeah, I mean, it's an opportunity to show his humanity.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. He's not just a rule-following robot.
So do you have any other over-analysis of this episode? I feel like we've analyzed it quite a bit as we've gone along, but do you have anything else?
I've done it mostly as we've gone along. I do still have the theory that the reason why they didn't try and bust him out of the brig or use their weapon that could reverse force fields was because they wanted the chance of the TOS to escape or somehow get away to continue the hunt. I do think there's interesting callbacks to the Predator movies in this show. I looked it up and Predator 2 had only been released like 3 years before and Predator, the original movie, was 1987. So it's still relatively fresh in the public's mind or the sci-fi viewing public's mind.
That's the end of your over-analysis?
Yeah, I think that's the end of my analysis.
All right, if we go to the section of women in the future, this is not a great episode for women in the future because of two reasons. One, we didn't have a lot of women or female characters at all in this episode. There's a little Dax and a little Kira. Kira does get to shoot at something.
First person to shoot at something. Plus, yes. Kira turned up ready for a gang fight. I'm just going to point that out.
And Dax is just, you know, being sciencey and being the science officer, and she's fine, but she's, you know, doesn't really have a lot to do in this episode. We also don't get much Bashir in this episode, so it's not that the female characters were just being left out. It's just that they weren't in this particular story. And the only female character that really had any lines was the woman way back at the beginning who was complaining about being harassed by Quark. So, you know, not great. Not great for women in the future in this episode.
But Kira was the first to fire.
Yeah. But no character development. Nothing really interesting happening with them. And of course, Keiko, nowhere to be found.
Still missing.
Still missing. Let's go to the last section here of thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs neutral. What is your rating?
I definitely give this a thumbs up. This was a very enjoyable episode. I did like the way Miles was portrayed in this and sort of you got to see more of Miles' sense of humor.
I think I'm going to give this one a thumbs down.
Really?
I don't have any reason to go back and watch it. I'm not sure what I got out of it. We developed Miles a little bit, but not really. He was still worker man Miles who was kind of jokey with, you know, the alien trying to buddy up to him. And he was also kind of nasty and unpleasant to Quark, who I don't care. He deserves someone to be nasty and pleasant to him. But to him and also to Bashir. Oh, that's right. Bashir did have one line. I said earlier he didn't have any lines. He had the one line that Miles basically told him to shut up.
One line and got cut off.
Yeah. So they developed him a little bit, and of course he saved him, but you knew he was going to save him. I didn't think there was anything particularly interesting and compelling about the characters or about this story. And it just gave me even more reason to dislike Quark.
Yes, I think that Quark is definitely turning into the foil, complete foil.
I thought the guy who played Tosk was really good. And I also thought that the red guy, long-haired alien, who never had a name, so I don't know who he was. But I also thought he was pretty good, you know, just in terms of acting. But yeah, I would not watch this episode again.
I did like his little sort of snort and shudder. He actually did it twice.
Did he?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you give this a thumbs up. And even I was looking around afterwards on Google. I think I was looking for the name of the actor of one of the characters or something. And I noticed that there were some relatively high ratings for it. And I wonder if in retrospect, right, if you're going back in time and you're watching this just on its own without knowing the rest of the show or the rest of Star Trek that comes after this, if there was something compelling about it in the moment, right, in that point in time. Because as I look back on it, it felt really dated to me and it didn't do anything for me. So, thumbs down.
Really? I find that fascinating.
Well, maybe that's why we're married.
Could be. Well, I think that's the reason that we're watching both of these shows, because we both take away very different interpretations of the episodes and have very different opinions on what's good and bad.
Yeah, we absolutely do. We have very different perspectives on the shows overall, and on really any shows. There aren't a lot of shows that we watch together. And so going back and watching this, we're just kind of doing it for fun, and also because you keep telling me that this is the greatest Star Trek and I need to watch it. So yeah, I mean, it's good that we hear each other's different perspectives, and those different perspectives come out in this podcast. We watch the show separately in the same house, but we don't talk about it until we get onto the podcast.
And hopefully if people are listening, they're finding the podcast interesting as well.
Yeah, and hopefully people out there who are listening are willing to share their ideas with us. I'd like to hear the overanalysis of other people as well, and hear everybody else's perspective. But that's it for episode 5. Join us next week for episode 6. And in the meantime, if you do want to tell us about your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at rebingeit.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me.